Welcome back, gang. Wow, wasn't that a great talk with Lori Jean? She is amazing. To take the center from a one-room shop with two phones to, what did she say, Diane? 800 employees and a $140 million budget. I just... blows
right
me
around
away.
There. I think it was 800 employees and 2,000 or 147,000.
Million.
Millions.
Million.
Sorry. Million.
Yeah, million.
Million.
That wouldn't even get you her salary. And now we're moving to the next icon, John Davidson from Americans. I'm sorry.
Freedom for all
Americans. Yes, Freedom for All Americans. Yeah, Jason, you learned how to use the applause button. I'm so proud.
I'm learning it.
That's awesome. So, gang, let me tell you a little bit about John Davidson. So I was a law clerk back in the early 80s for Diane Abbott, who is seated over here to my right, and got tired of commuting from Laguna Beach all the way to West LA. So I went to clerk for Georgia Garrett Norris, the late Georgia Garrett Norris and the late Marjorie Rushforth in 1984. And they said, we have this new case, Vincent Chalk, a school teacher with AIDS. The Orange County Board of Education is kicking him out. And we're working with this lawyer named John Davidson from Irell and Manello, right?
Yes.
I was 85. I think that's the first time I met you, which is 35 years ago, John. Was that your very first LGBT case?
Well, I got involved in working with the ACLU while I was in private practice. In a case that went to the Supreme Court, the R-Line case, it involved a teacher with tuberculosis where the Reagan Justice Department was arguing that people with infectious diseases could not be considered protected under laws prohibiting discrimination on the basis of disability. And although the case was factually about tuberculosis, their brief was all about AIDS.
Mm.
And so Susan McGreevy, who was a lawyer at the ACLU at the time, enlisted my help in writing the first amicus brief, friend of the court brief, to the U.S. Supreme Court about AIDS, trying to educate them about how it actually was not contagious in the way that many other diseases are thought of, that it was actually very hard to spread, and trying to make sure that they understood the science. But at the time, there wasn't like a lot of compendia of information. And so I remember my office was just full of morbidity and mortality weekly reports from the CDC.
Oh, God, remember
and
that? Oh, my God.
Journal of American Medical Association articles as we tried to like distill it all for the court.
The judge back in the Chalk case, Judge Gray,
I think
it was William Gray, the late William Gray. I remember when he ruled against the County of Orange and reinstated Vince Chalk, he made some statement. I don't remember exactly. I was a very young person back then, 26 years old, something along the lines of your theory about how HIV can be transmitted in the classroom is as likely as men from Mars invading the planet or something like that. Something like that. Something really amazing. When we come back, gang, we'll be talking to John Davidson about his long and distinguished legal career fighting for LGBT people here on Channel Q. For the musical Hairspray, I Know Where I've Been. We thought that'd be a great song for you, John.
Thanks.
You have been to the Supreme Court, I think, more than any other LGBT lawyer in this country. How many times? We just counted. Six?
Five times.
Five
so
times. And let's talk about those for a second. So I think the first one was what?
Romer versus Lawrence.
Now, Romer versus Colorado was a case about an anti-discrimination law that Denver passed that the voters of the state of Colorado overturned.
Right. They passed an amendment to the state constitution to prohibit any government body in Colorado from enacting protections for lesbians, gay men, or bisexuals. They could have protections for heterosexuals, just not for lesbians, gay men, and bisexuals. And so it repealed the city ordinances in four cities, I think, in Colorado at the time. And the U.S. Supreme Court decided that that was a violation of equal protection in kind of the most fundamental sense, that if you're saying that the government can't protect a certain group of people against discrimination, but could protect other people against discrimination, that was itself a denial of equal protection of the laws.
Per se. It makes sense.
But
was that 5-4?
That was, I think it was 6-3.
6-3.
But Justice Kennedy wrote that decision as he did for almost all of the good decisions that we got from the Supreme Court since.
Right. And then Lawrence v. Texas.
Lawrence v. Texas.
Overturned Bowers versus Hardwick. Now, Bowers versus Hardwick was upheld the sodomy statute of Georgia but it kind of held us back as a people.
Yes,
for a long time.
I mean, it you know, even though sodomy laws weren't enforced very regularly in terms of, like, you had to catch people having sex, but they were used as justifications for denying people certain jobs or for denying people custody of their kids by saying, well, you're a criminal by definition. And therefore you're not fit to parent and you can't be a police officer or a school teacher. And so it was really important to erase this idea that our sharing our love with other people was somehow a criminal act.
Yeah. Diane's written or nodding her head because she was a lesbian parent in
I
the
was.
70s and trying to figure out how to keep her kids.
Yeah, it was very challenging. And there was really no organization at that point in time that was doing anything or an acknowledgement that lesbians could be mothers. That in itself was a huge, huge concept for people to understand.
So Lawrence v. Texas overturned Bowers. Was that a 5-4 too?
Or yeah, that was a 5-4.
Again, Justice Kennedy.
Wrote the majority opinion.
God bless Justice Kennedy. Sacramento, California, right?
Correct.
And appointed by Ronald Reagan or
Ford?
Bush
maybe?
Or Gerald Ford?
I think.
Oh, God, thank God. Thank God, God that happened. And then after that, what was
Probably next was one we lost, Dale versus the Boy Scouts of America.
Oh.
Which
I don't remember the facts of that. I mean, I guess it's pretty obvious.
It involved somebody who, James Dale, who had been in the Boy Scouts for many years.
Eagle Scout.
And, right, and he was an Eagle Scout. And then he was going to become an assistant scoutmaster when somebody saw an interview with him at from his school newspaper talking about him being gay and him kind of doing stuff at the school to support other gay students. And he got a letter saying he was being kicked out. And could no longer be involved. Lambda Legal brought a lawsuit. Evan Wolfson was the lawyer, and they ended up winning at the New Jersey Supreme Court. And then the Boy Scouts took it to the U.S. Supreme Court, which overturned the decision by 5-4. And
who wrote this one? Rehnquist? Was it Rehnquist as the Chief Justice? I'm thinking.
God, I'm not remembering if it was him. Perhaps Scalia. I don't remember.
One of them.
And they held that the Boy Scouts had a First Amendment right to choose who was going to speak on its behalf.
Mm.
But, you know, the battle against the Boy Scouts discrimination didn't end. And instead, we tried to go put pressure on them, political and economic pressure. And eventually, they got rid of their policy. And now it's up to the individual den or troop leadership as to who they're going to choose, but the Boy Scouts does not prevent someone who's gay or trans from serving.
You know, the Boy Scouts here in Los Angeles just started to admit girls.
Yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
Isn't that amazing? I guess because they do things like camping and campfires and things that the Girl Scouts don't cover. That's what I was told anyway. I'm not sure. That's the reason, but
they are slightly different programs.
Yeah.
So that one we lost in the short term, but, you know, ended up
winning in the
outing
law.
The Boy Scouts as a discriminatory organization, and that helped ultimately change the policy.
Right. And then marriage. I guess marriage would be the next one.
Right. So first the Windsor case that held that the federal government had to recognize and treat equally marriages of same-sex couples that were lawfully entered in states as states began to allow those or that were entered in other countries.
And that was Edith Windsor. That's a 5-4,
right.
I assume, with Kennedy again.
Right. And then, of course, the Obergefell decision, which declared that all states had to allow same-sex couples to marry and recognize marriages that had entered in other jurisdictions.
You know, John, it's a shame you don't have anything to do in your spare time. I mean, thank you for charting the entire movement's history in your legal work. That's amazing.
You know, we've come very, very far, and I think a lot of people these days don't really know the history of what it was like to lose custody of your children, to be fired, to be denied housing, to be denied services, to not be allowed to serve in the military.
Right.
Something transgender people are still experiencing
even now
under this administration.
Even now. When we come back, we're going to get back with John Davidson about the current work that he's doing with Freedom From All Americans. Thanks for tuning in here on Channel Q. I picked this song for you, John.
Thank you.
I picked this song for you. You are our Rocky Balboa. I told Jason, get the Rocky theme show. Rocky, oh, he's like, Rocky Balboa?
I said, what? Rocky? Yeah. And he said, yes, because he's a fighter.
He's a fighter for decades and decades and decades. Welcome back, gang. If you're just tuning in, here in studio, Diane Abbott is co-hosting with me, and we're interviewing John Davidson from Freedom For All Americans. I think before the break, I said From All Americans. I should have said From All MAGA Hats, maybe is what I meant. That's what I meant. John, tell us a bit about the current work that you're doing, litigation.
So I joined Freedom for All Americans as its chief counsel a little over a year ago. And that organization is about 4 years old and works to secure comprehensive and effective sexual orientation and gender identity non-discrimination laws across the country. I've been doing both kind of legislative lawyering, helping try to get good laws passed in states and at the federal level, and to fight against laws that would create big exceptions to anti-discrimination protections. What I've been working on most recently is three cases that the U.S. Supreme Court's going to hear argument on October 8th. They all raise the question whether existing federal employment discrimination law, which bars discrimination based on sex, encompasses discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. Mm. So these are incredibly important decisions that the Supreme Court will be making that will really determine whether if you're discriminated against at work because you're LGBT, can you go into federal court and make a claim or not? Now, we've been fighting for years to get express protections, and there's a bill called the Equality Act, which passed the House of Representatives this year, which is a major achievement. But people really need to be putting pressure on their senators to try to get it through the Senate as well.
Right.
Elections have consequences, both in terms of what's the composition of Congress and will we be able to get good bills through, and will Congress stand by as this current administration takes action against our community again and again and again, whether it's the military ban or efforts to allow government contractors to raise religious defenses to fire people based on their sexual orientation or gender identity. In any event, these three cases that the Supreme Court's going to decide, I was in charge of coordinating all the friend of the court briefs that were submitted to the court. There were 49 of them on our side.
Wow.
Got incredible number of supportive voices from 206 major businesses, 151 members of Congress, 84 local governments and mayors, the AMA, the American Bar Association, the American Psychological Association, the National Education Association, the American Association for the Advancement of Retired People. I mean, we got the kind of mainstream organizations to say to the court, if you apply the conservative principle of textualism, of looking what the words are, it is sex discrimination to fire a man because he is attracted to other men when you wouldn't fire a woman who is attracted to men. It is because of his sex, at least in part.
Right.
And if you fire a transgender woman who was fine when she identified as a male, but now that she identifies as a female, she's not okay for the same job. Well, that's also discrimination based on sex. So it doesn't require some change in the understanding of sex. Even if you think sex just means male or female, it is a violation of the laws prohibiting sex discrimination to discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity. The challenge we face is that Trump has put two very conservative people on the Supreme Court, Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. So there's now a majority of conservatives on the court. And the question is, will we be able to reach them to do the right thing here?
Right.
Or will they vote based on politics? And, you know, we've seen in a number of other cases challenging Trump administration positions on immigration and on, you know, a range of other measures, that the court has been fairly deferential to the position. And one of the things that's sad here was one of these cases that involves a transgender woman who was an embalmer and funeral director who was fired when she told the owner of the company that she would be transitioning. The EEOC originally brought that case, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and they won at the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. But now that the case is before the Supreme Court, because the funeral home took it up, the Department of Justice now represents the EEOC, and they are filing a brief today saying it's legal to discriminate on the basis
of
gender
identity.
Thank you,
William Barr. Thank you, William Barr.
And so, again, as I say, elections have consequences.
So everybody is holding out hope that John Roberts is going to become the new swing vote.
And we've seen him do that in several cases. He was the one who basically said that the census could not include a question about your immigration status, you know, whether you were a citizen or not, at least without a better explanation than the government was giving. And then there wasn't time for them to try to manufacture something before the census forms needed to be printed. And so it's not going to be on there, which would have had very serious impacts on the counting, getting an accurate count of how many people there are in this country, which is very important for purposes of apportionment of the state's representatives in Congress and of getting various kinds of funding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think we have any hope for Clarence Thomas helping us out or any of the others. So I guess John Roberts, man.
But, you know, we have a lot of work to do. And one of the important things I think is important that people need to know is that win or lose these cases before the Supreme Court, we're still going to need Congress to act, because this case is about employment discrimination. And even if the court accepts that it is sex discrimination to discriminate based on sexual orientation or gender identity, that only helps us with laws that currently bar sex discrimination. There is no federal law that bars sex discrimination in public accommodations, so restaurants and stores. But there is no law that currently bars sex discrimination in federally funded services like adoption agencies. Hmm. And so the Equality Act would add prohibitions on sex discrimination into those, and then would specifically enumerate sexual orientation and gender identity as forms of sex discrimination. So it's going to be important to push for that law regardless of what happens at the court.
Diane, do you feel like we're back in law school? I mean, I could listen to the professor all day.
I could too.
I feel like I should be taking notes.
Fascinating. really fascinating.
Notes. John, we have less than a minute left. A website, people want to learn more about Freedom for All Americans. Where would you direct people?
www.freedomforallamericans.org.
There you go. You can join the fight, gang. It sounds like the battle is ongoing. If you want to know where to give your cold, hard cash, that's one of the places right there.
Thanks so much, John.
John, thank you for coming.
Diane, lovely to see you.
So good to see you,
will you come back
John.
Again in the future and give us an update on all these cases?
Definitely.
That would be awesome. All right, gang. When we come back, I'll be talking to Diane Abbott, gossiping about her love life. So you sure want to come back for that here on Channel Q.